Welcome to another week of Level Up with Matt Rogers. I'm your host, Matt Rogers. With me, as always, my man, Eli Adelman.
How are you, sir?
Making it happen. I'm fantastic, man. We just keep getting grand slams with our guests.
That's right.
Today is no exception. How's your marriage going, Eli?
It's been great, man. I got some brownie points this weekend. What? I threw my wife a surprise party for her birthday.
Look at you. So. Dang. Hold on. Let me check. No, dude, I didn't get the invite. This is awkward. So, how was your awesome party?
How was yours, bro?
No, all right. So, tell you, you had a surprise party for Liz. What happened?
So, she turned 40.
Yeah.
News is out there. And I kind of like played it down, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'll take you out for dinner or something. And like, you know, she was bummed out. She wasn't getting a party. And so, She went out with her friends on Saturday, had a good time, got back, she was tired, and I was like, well, you know, if you're tired, I won't take out dinner, but maybe I just got to grab some things you don't have to cook, and then we pulled up, and...
Oh, let's go! So the surprise party, she thought she was tired, and then you ended up partying?
Yeah, she was good.
Good for you. Did you have sex?
No, not Saturday. Not Saturday. Not a good time for that.
But look at you, you're flying high now, huh?
We'll get there.
Brownie points?
Yeah, we're good.
If you're having trouble getting there, we have the top, one of the top marriage experts and marriage coaches in the nation. He's been in the New York Times twice. He's been interviewed by them. He's been on USA Today. He's even been on the Today Show all the way in Australia as well. And I'm honored to have him here today. The one and only Coach Lee is in the house. Let's go.
What's up, Matt?
Dude, I am so pumped that you're here. We have a mutual friend, Johnny Cardwell. He's one of your partners, employees. He works for your company. Great friend of mine. Made the intro, and I'm so glad he did. Johnny is a great man. And now, because of my friend Johnny, the one and only sits in front of me right now. You have over 60 million views on YouTube.
70 million, but...
Yeah. 70? Dude, so like...
Close enough.
No, but it's going that fast because I looked not too long ago and it was at 60. So you're blowing up, man. You're one of the best. What's it feel like to be, you know, the GOAT at something?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm really happy with how it's going. And it's pretty surreal just because it has been, in a lot of ways, it moved so quickly early on. I was going to make a few videos and I told my wife, I said, I think I can make maybe like $500 doing a few YouTube videos about this.
Yeah.
3 months later, I was looking to sell my SEO business and I was going to just do this full time.
SEO means search engine optimization, which means when someone Googles something, the 2, 3, 4 at the top are the ones that have good SEO companies or engines, right? Am I saying that right?
Right. And I had been working with a marriage enrichment company for a long time, an organization. I primarily did SEO for them early on, but they started involving me in other things. Mm-hmm. And so I had been doing that along with SEO. SEO paid most of the bills for a long time, you know, close to 15 or 16 years when I finally said, I think I'll make some YouTube videos on relationships because I was tired of it being kind of in the shadows behind me. I wanted to do some more with it. And I had a friend who came to me and his girlfriend had broken up with him. And he's like, man, I'm miserable. Do you think you could help me? He's like, I know you work primarily with marriages. I said, oh yeah, I could probably give you, at least point you down the right road. I said, what have you done so far? He said, well, I call and she doesn't answer. And I text her, you know, all day. And he said, when her voicemail picks up, all I can do is cry into her voicemail. And he's like, what do I need to do? And I said, not that. And so I got him to just, I said, look, it's real simple right now. And a lot of times I'm told I'm kind of the no contact guy because I do talk about that a lot, but there's a lot more. But a lot of times the first thing you need to do is back away. And so I just told him, I said, just leave her alone. Give her the breakup because you're not letting her have it. And so she's frustrated. She's defensive. She's running further away from you. You're not getting anywhere. Go silent. So he did.
And that's hard for guys, right?
Guys and girls.
Because your mind goes, she's in Vegas right now, topless dancing and popping bottles with Jay-Z. And like you make up stuff in your head.
That's what most people think. Yeah.
Right.
Vegas. So,
it's hard. But do you coach people and help them through that time? Because that's tough.
Yeah, I do. And one of the things I'll tell them is this difficult? And they'll laugh like, well, of course, it's the hardest thing I've ever had to do. That's what most people say. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I'll say, okay, so what if I had told you, you could get this person back? They would want to be with you. You two would be together. But I needed you to do something for me. I needed you to go to the middle of the forest and you had to fetch me this rare jewel. And along the journey, you were going to have to fight dragons and all this stuff, you know, and you'd have to walk over glass barefoot. And they're like, oh, I'll do it. I'll do whatever it takes. All right, then leave her alone.
Oh. I can't do that.
Like, come on. What I just told you is way harder.
Give me the barefoot glass, but yeah. I can't leave her alone.
Exactly. This is the difficult thing. If you're willing to do it, you have a better chance. And it's really that simple. So that's how it started. And it by the fourth or fifth video, I had this video actually called Your Ex's Mind During No Contact. So it's basically, what are they thinking about while I'm not contacting them?
Great question.
And it took off. And that's when I decided I was going to do this full time.
What's the answer? What are they thinking about?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I want to know.
Oh, you want to know?
Yes.
Well, for starters, they're usually pretty shocked that you can stay away from them, because when they break up with you, there's a bad dynamic to where they think they're more attractive than you, or else they wouldn't be breaking up with you. And a lot of people get really offended when I say that, but I'm like, tell me a situation where that's not true. And nobody can, because they'll say, what if you're just not compatible? I'm like, well, then you think you could do better, right? Oh, yeah. So it works that way. If attraction falls, all those issues that seem like they weren't that important all of a sudden become really important, and they really irritate you, and you think you're going to do better somewhere else or with someone else. So that's what happens. Attraction falls, and they think that you're a little less, maybe a lot less, on the attraction totem pole than they are. And so the worst thing you could do at that point is chase and pursue.
Wow.
Because you're basically holding bait in front of them, and they want it so badly that they're running away from it. Like, it's not working. And so you have to back off. And first, just show them you're not going to chase them and that you're strong enough to stay away, which draws into question the way they're viewing this, which is, I'm more attractive, I can do better. But then if this person's not chasing you down and not pursuing you, and they're just kind of, it almost looks like they don't care, that really brings that into question. Am I really that much more attractive than this person? Because they're not chasing me. It's like they can just move on without me. Maybe I'm not as attractive. And so is it a mind game? Maybe a little, but it's also a mature response, because come on, none of us think that the person who's in front of her house with a boombox crying and begging and all that, that nobody thinks there's a mature adult there.
Right.
You know, making a scene, continually calling, continually texting, that's not maturity. That's not what grownups do. And so really it's just a mature response, is to say, if you want to break up with me, I don't want to be with someone who doesn't want to be with me. It's pointless. So I'm going to give you what you want, even though it hurts. I'm going to let you have it. That's the mature response. And really that's all it is. But a lot of times it works like magic. It doesn't always work.
Right.
It doesn't. But it does work more than the other way, by far.
So this is more of like drastically increasing your odds if you want to get your ex back.
Exactly. It is drastically increasing your odds over the idea that you can just kind of blunt force get them back by pestering and begging and pleading and talking. I'll tell you one thing, though. I have heard some crazy stories, and I never, ever give up my client's identity. But there was one woman who told me he broke up with her and he didn't want to talk about it. She said, so I need your opinion on this. I had the key to his apartment. I went to his apartment and I took his cat and I left a note.
So this is a female that broke up with a man?
No, he broke up with her.
Okay. And she's coming to you. She got broken up with.
She wants him back. And she wanted my opinion on what had happened. She said, I had the key to his apartment still. I went over, I took his cat and I left a note. And it said, if you want to see your cat, come talk to me.
Oh, geez.
And I said, let me stop you right there. Like, you kidnapped his cat for ransom? And I said, what happened next? She said, he called the police. Of course. And they came over and got the cat back and asked if he wanted to press charges. He didn't. He could have, but he didn't. And she said, what'll I do now? And I said,
kidnap the dog. No, I'm just kidding.
And I said, I'm just going to be real honest with you. You know how insane that looks, right? She's like, do you think so? I said, yes, I do. And so That one didn't work out, but that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
You can hurt yourself a lot more by those emotional responses when you've been broken up with than if you just stay quiet. You can hurt, you can talk to your parents about it, or I don't suggest talking to your friends about it because it'll often get back to your ex. But if you have somebody who's only your friend, you can talk to them about it. Just don't talk to your ex about it. Leave them alone, and it will work out more times than it will the other way, and more times than not.
Right. A couple questions there. In the waiting period, so I just got broken up with, I'm saying hypothetically, I just got broken up with, I'm dying inside. I want to reach out to her so bad. But Coach Lee, who I trust, is telling me, give her space, let it process. I know they ask you this. Well, how long is it going to take? Typically, I know you don't have a bulletproof, well, it's 3 days, but typically, how long am I waiting until something happens? And what is that something? What normally happens?
Well, it's all over the place, of course. But I try to give people kind of a guideline. And I have a video called Stages Your Ex Goes Through During No Contact. It's on YouTube. And it's had, I believe it's had over 2 million views.
Dang.
And it basically says that you have to wait. And people don't, I don't want to wait around on them. I'm not saying you wait around on them. I'm saying that you wait until you start having expectations. Okay. And that's going to be, they have to go through a few stages. The first stage is relief. And this really hurts a lot of people, but they're relieved that they got the breakup over with because they didn't want to, unless they're like a sociopath or something, they're not looking forward to dumping you because
right.
they know it's going to hurt and it's awkward and they want to get it over with. So once they get it over with, first of all, they've been thinking about it for a long time. It's usually very rarely is it going to be an impulse overnight thing unless it's very issue specific. But most of the time, it's been weeks or months or sometimes even years.
Jeez.
So they come to you and say it, and you think, I can just talk to them. Man, they've been thinking about this for a long time. They've had the conversation in their head. They already are running circles around you. They're way more prepared than you. That's why it never works for you to try to talk them into it. Or if it does, it's like 2 days later, they break up with you for real this time.
This is gold.
So the first stage is relief. They're just glad they got it over with. Of course, your first stage on the other side of this is chaos and just absolute sorrow.
They're at peace. We're at chaos.
Oh, yeah. Complete polar opposites. And that's why they don't understand you. When you're begging and pleading, it makes you look really crazy because they're at peace. You know, they've gotten it over with. They may hurt. A lot of times people will even cry together, but they're resolved. So you're not going to talk them out of it right then. Maybe later, but really that's a position of weakness. So we don't want to go there, but they have to get through that relief stage. And the fastest way to get them through is just give it to them. Don't make them want the breakup more because you're not giving it to them. Like, don't make it something that if you would get out of the way, they could get to this happiness that's out there, this nirvana that's beyond you and your big mouth. If you can just back off, then they can get past relief. And since you're not chasing or anything, all they have left, since they're not striving for the breakup, they have it. So now they have to actually live with the breakup and they have to look back a little bit. Instead of trying to get away from you, now they're kind of curious, which is the second stage. They get a little curious. Where are you? Why are you not chasing them down? Am I not so sexy that you just can't stay away and you're begging and pleading? Because some people really like to get that validation.
Do they typically reach out then like, hey, just checking in, see how you're doing? Does it vary?
That can happen in the curiosity stage. It can happen really in any stage. It's less likely to happen in relief. But after curiosity is concern. And that's when it really happens because they are, first of all, curiosity. They didn't really get any answers because you're keeping your mouth shut. And if you're keeping your mouth shut and they don't have any answers, then you are the answer. And so
fascinating. I'm putting myself in the person's shoes that got broken up with. Now I'm starting to feel like I'm winning a little bit in this.
Inch by inch. usually in the curiosity stage, they're going to be checking your social media. They're trying to figure out, has he moved on?
Do you suggest people staying private on social media or, hey, make it public and make it look good? Or do you not, is that like semantics games? Don't play them. Like, what do you say?
Well, you run a big risk if they think you're trying to get at them or trying to get their attention or trying to show them something. So I usually tell people, how often do you post on social media? Keep it about that amount. and post pictures of you out in groups with mixed company. Because if they think you're trying to make them think you're on a date or something like that, that can blow up in your face. Jealousy, trying to get them to be jealous. If they're at least halfway suspicious that you might try something, you're going to look like a fool.
Yeah.
You really are. So
we see that all the time with people that we follow that we know that they just broke up and it's like, oh, dude, you know, you come with judgments. They're going off the deep end, or that's not real, or they seem too thirsty. Like, you're not fooling anybody. We can see what's going on. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And but what most people don't realize is that Hollywood's dead wrong on this. Most of the time, if you broke up with somebody and then a couple weeks later you see them and they're on a date, you know, with a member of the opposite sex, and it's the two of them, and it's like, look at us on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. A lot of times that person is like, okay, I definitely can't contact them now because I'm gonna be rejected. I'm gonna be told off. It's not gonna be pleasant for me because they have somebody else. And a lot of people think, oh no, they'll want me worse. Yeah, they might want you, but they've already broken up with you. And some people can just say, you know, I think I messed that up, and they've already got somebody. So what's the point? Because nobody wants rejection. Nobody wants to feel like an idiot, you know, chasing after the person they broke up with who's now got another boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. And so a lot of people ask, should I post pictures of me with like a girl or something? No, you shouldn't, because it could blow up in your face. More likely, it will blow up in your face than it'll help you out. The best thing you can do is post a picture of you in a mixed group of people, male and female, so that they'll wonder, like, are any of those girls interested in him? And then they have to, a lot of people usually kind of do this analysis, and they'll think back to when you two first started dating, and they'll think, well, I thought he looked good. So some of those other girls might think he looks good. That's where you want them to be. More mystery, more questions, not like, oh, he's got a date.
This is fascinating. So if we're following exactly what Coach tells us, which I highly recommend it because he's one of the best, we've let them have their freedom, and then they've gone through, so now we're in the stage of concern, right? Like they're concerned. This whole time, we have not reached out to them, right? This is them this is our ex processing this. Okay, now what?
So now we reach the, when we've already gone through relief, curiosity, concern. Now we get to contact, hopefully.
Oh, snap.
So it's our triple C, right? Relief, curiosity, concern, contact. Doesn't always happen. And I'm quick to tell people that this is a human and they're unpredictable. They have free will and you don't know all the moving parts that are involved in this, especially if you really blew it in the relationship. But that's the stage where there are the highest odds that they're going to contact you. And usually it's going to be, how are you doing?
Like, why are they contacting us? For, you know, I know that's not set and clad of everything's the same, but typically why are they contacting us? Do they want us back at this point? Because they went through curiosity, they went through concern, now it's contact. Why are they contacting us?
Well, they're contacting you because they're hedging their bets in a lot of ways. They actually, when they break up with you, there's a little bit of a permanent feeling that you will always be an option because it's so obvious. You want this and they don't. They're breaking up with you. And very few people at the breakup actually think, if I break up with them, I might not be able to get them back. Because they don't want you back at the moment, but you're so much wanting the relationship that they're wanting to toss aside that they just assume if it doesn't work out over here, you know, with this other person or looking for another person or just being free for a year or whatever, that they can just send you a text and they'll have you just like that. Because that's the dynamic at the breakup, that you will do anything, that you want to save the relationship. They're the person who wants to leave and throw it away. So there's a feeling of permanence. And basically, in curiosity and especially in concern, that's being questioned very loudly because you're not acting like somebody who's permanently interested in them. You're acting like somebody who said, you know, if you're not interested in me, there are other people who are, and I'll just move on. So they usually reach out first to see if you'll talk to them. And there's another coach online. I think she's a great person, but I've had a lot of her clients contact me, you know, book a coaching session with me because they followed her advice that you should ignore them when they reach out.
And you do not think that?
Not if you want them back.
Not if you want them back. Okay, so I see the call coming through on my cell phone. Holy crap. It's been 3 months. I've been with you for 3 months. Coach Lee was right. They've gone through concern and now they're contact. Do I answer it or do I go let it go to voicemail?
Now, if they're calling you, it's a little different. You can let it go to voicemail. Like maybe you're too busy. That's an option. It kind of feel because you kind of have to look and see what you feel in that moment. You okay. think you can talk to them because some people are too emotional.
Right.
Or they're too excited. And so you can let it go to the voicemail and then you can just send the text and say, hey, sorry, I missed your call. I was busy. Feel free to text or whatever, you know, no big deal. Usually
that's strong, by the way, if you miss it, like, hey, sorry, I was busy. Feel free to text.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, that's actually rare. It's rare they would call. Okay. Usually it's a text.
Okay.
Because they want to see if you're going to respond or not. That's number one. Like, could they actually have a conversation with you? Before they get into the more detailed stuff, like, hey, you want to meet up and talk? They want to see if you'll even respond there. So they're not going to start with that. That's the fallacy of kind of this other strategy that you would just ignore them when they text you. And so I have a lot of clients who are clients because they took some bad advice and they ignored them and they never heard anything else. And it's like, why? I don't understand. This one lady, I don't understand. If he really liked me and stuff, why would he not text again? And I said, well, if you really liked him, why would you ignore him?
Wow. That's a bomb.
And that's what he's thinking. Okay, I blew it. She's not interested. She's ignoring me. And, you know, sometimes women in particular, because they're taught to be passive and to let men take the lead, and even they're told to play hard to get, which doesn't work, by the way. Men hate that, ladies. Men hate you playing hard to get because they don't need any more stress in their life, and your act's going to be a lot better off if it's clear how you feel about them so they don't have to guess and then invest all this emotional energy and money and whatever on a whim.
So you help, especially ladies, find that good balance between don't play hard to get, but don't be too thirsty and don't right. be too needy. Because there is a balance, right?
Right. And that's true for anybody. But the other person ought to know that you're interested because most guys I know, and I tell a lot of women this, you have no way to relate to the number of times most men have been rejected in their life because they have to make the first move. They have to approach. And most men have been rejected usually hundreds of times by their mid-20s. Most women have to sit there. Let's see. There was that time. Oh, no. He asked me first, didn't he? They don't even know what it's like.
Wow.
You know, and I see a lot of YouTube videos where women are complaining. Why don't men approach anymore? Maybe this will give you an idea. I mean, if you had been rejected 100 times, what would make you risk it? You would have to feel pretty good about it. So that's why I tell ladies, look, if you're interested, he ought to know that there's some interest, not that you're just ready to walk down the aisle, but that you're ready to see where this takes you. He ought to know that. And if you're thinking that you want him to not know that, if you want to play hard to get, you're going to be hard to be gotten. You're going to be hard to be with.
Yeah.
But that's a side note. Basically, people will book sessions with me, and they've gotten bad advice to ignore this person. And they're like, what'll I do? Like, well, now it's in your court, unfortunately. That's why you don't ignore them, because now it's all on you and you're probably not going to hear from them. So
I like how you're honest too. Like you give them, hey, this ain't bulletproof, but I'm giving you realistic expectations and I'm putting the odds in your favor.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of people are surprised when it works because it sounds like I'm saying don't do anything and something will happen. It's actually more complicated than that. You are doing something. You're making a choice.
Which is why you're an expert. And I know you're going to get clients after this episode airs. So when they are your client and the contact stage happens, oh my gosh, she just texted me. Am I texting you right away as your client? Coach Lee, she did it. Or am I already prepared that I don't have to reach out to coach? And do you respond same day, like with your clients?
Well, usually I try to prepare them because I can't always be on call 24/7. And if they want follow-up, you know, we do have some of that, especially with the Relationship Reignite Workshop, which is mostly for marriages in crisis. Mm-hmm. That includes follow-up, or at least it's optional to have that. And rarely do they have my actual personal text, but I do check emails a lot. And we have a support community as well. And nice. I have other coaches on my staff, and they're in there, and they respond, and I respond. So you can get answers pretty quick, but I try to make sure that they are prepared for when they need to do something in a matter of minutes. Because if you don't respond for like 2 days or something while you're waiting on me, you could get yourself in a mess. So I usually prepare them on the call. Like, look, these are some ways they could reach out, and this is what you need to do. So they know that after a call.
So I just got the text I've been waiting 3 months for. What do I do?
Usually that text is, how are you? Or are you okay? Or just checking up on you, something like that. And most people laugh because they're like, it was word for word. It was one of those.
Love when that happens.
And the reason is they don't know what to say. You know, they've dumped you and now they're kind of thinking maybe they messed up. What? Nobody knows what to say in that situation. So the idea of ignoring them is just ridiculous because they're already kind of timidly, you okay? Usually I just say, I'm doing good. Hope you are as well. Like, don't ask the question. Don't say, are you okay? It's almost like you want to come across like, you can respond or not. That's fine. I'm just telling you, matter of fact, you know,
that's
I'm doing
so
good.
Strong.
I hope you are as well.
Because you're still being kind.
Right. You are. There's no need to be cold or rude because you live too great of a life for that, right? You don't want them to think that what they did just destroyed you and now you hate them. And you have to see it from a position of strength that this hurts, but I can move on from it. And I don't really have hard feelings toward that person. Because I live such a good life, I don't have to have hard feelings. You know, that's kind of, yeah. And some people say, well, isn't that faking it? No, it's just like this. I really like Snickers bars. And a lot of people on my channel know I mention that. And in the comments sometimes they'll say, Coach, if I could, I'd buy you like 100 Snickers and stuff. I'm like, I would not eat them because I like them a whole lot. But my body does not like them, you know. And is that me being fake by saying, I really like that Snickers, but I'm not going to eat it? No, that's me using discipline.
That's such a good example.
That's something you obviously know a lot about. When it's 6 a.m. and you got to be in the weight room, that's not something you're just craving. You do it because you have discipline and because you want something that's out there that means more to you than the sacrifice you make by being there at 6 to bench press and get yelled at.
Yep.
Same type of thing. So, yeah, you're not going to tell them, I have dwelt in darkness without you. I'm so happy you've called.
But I'm also not going to say, I'm fantastic. This is the greatest.
Yeah, don't be fake. Then they'll just think you're fake, and that's not attractive. So you just tell them, I'm doing good. I hope you are as well. That simple.
No questions.
Nope, no questions.
Then what happens? This is fascinating.
Well.
So this is contact. Are we on to a next stage now? Because I didn't ask them a question.
There's not a stage after. I mean, those were the stages of no contact. But once they contact you...
Now we're in a different chapter.
Now we're in another world. They usually will ask if you'll see them in person.
Wow.
It doesn't always happen. And sometimes it happens on the next contact or the following contact. And the answer to that is, yeah, I have some time this week. And you just say, I have Thursday and I have Friday. Even if you have every day, just give them 2 days.
Yeah,
you know, between 3 and 6 or whatever. And, you know, that's where it's a lot of fun when people are beside themselves with joy because they're about to go meet up with their ex and they've been talking to me. And I'll get this email and sometimes I'll get voicemails. And people are just excited and crying and happy and all this stuff. And that's what really makes it worth it, is just thinking that this person is going to remember that I was able to help them with this and that now they feel like they feel a lot better. Maybe they've had another chance with this person and maybe they get married and have kids. That's one of the things that I think about just about every day is that I have several cases where there were children born to people who were going to divorce. And one guy.
That's beautiful.
I remember I was in the middle of a video and I saw a text come in, you know, and I was in between points anyway. And I just kind of glanced and I thought, oh, that's a client. I wonder what's going on. And he had sent me a picture from outside of the neonatal window, and it was a baby.
Dude.
And he said, Coach Lee, this child would not have been born if I hadn't had that conversation with you. And he's like, and now I'm with...
That's so great.
I'm with the woman of my dreams, and we've had a child together. You know, and I thought I had lost her forever. And I mean, I stopped the video, and I just took the day off. Because it was just such a good feeling. I wasn't patting myself on the back.
You mic dropped it.
It was just, I was kind of in a machine-like phase. You know, I'm going to knock out these videos. And that just made me kind of feel like, I don't know, real life or something. You know, that this dude, because I remember talking to this guy And so I went and played golf. And I think about that a lot. I think about that moment. And I've had others, but that one particular, just because he sent me a picture of the baby, you know. And so a lot of times people forget that I'm telling them what I think they should do based on observations, because I've seen these things happen. You know, 22 or so, 23 years, somewhere in there of doing this, I've seen so much that now I feel like I know what to expect. And if it doesn't happen, that's just the laws of math and numbers, that it doesn't always happen, but it happens a lot more than if you do it the other way.
So for those of you listening right now that are going through a divorce, on the verge of divorce, or maybe had a divorce and you regret it, I'm going to go down that road with Coach Lee right now in that. But before I do that, what we just went through of that process when you get broken up with, is that pretty much the playbook the same for the 17-year-old high school senior and the 35-year-old, I thought I was going to marry this person, and they break up? Is it kind of the same thing?
It's basically the same, even though those are two very different situations based on maturity and expectations of the future. Mm-hmm. The odds are less that it's going to work for the 17-year-old, because usually the other person, if they're 17 or 18, you know, they're going to go to college, or they're going to graduate, and they're going to go start working somewhere. And so the future is a lot less stable. They don't know as much about it. And if they start to think that you're not going to be part of it, you know, it's something that lowers attraction, because it feels like, well, this is temporary, you know. And
right.
But if the 30-year-old person who's dating and thinks this is the one I'm going to marry, if that other person actually thought that too, and you give them the breakup, in some ways you turn the tables to where they have to feel some loss, because they're in control when they first break up with you. It's what they want. It's not what you want. But when you give it to them and you're not chasing or pursuing, now they have to kind of sit with it, and they can start to think, I could reach a point where I want this person back, and they could not be gotten back. And that's what you want them to feel, that they actually have something to lose too. Whereas at the breakup, they've got their ears pinned back, and they're looking at that light at the end of the tunnel, and that's what they're focused on. I've got to get this over with so I can move on with my life.
So let's talk about that. Okay, now let's talk about marriage, okay? Your client is married, and their spouse thinks they want a divorce. Is there a difference between infidelity and, hey, neither one of us have cheated, but we just want out, or one person wants out, you know? How do I want to ask the question? How do you save a marriage if both think it's over? Because I'm 45 years old now, and I can't tell you how much it hurts me just in the last 2 months alone. And I was telling Johnny this when I was on the phone with him the other day. I've probably had 6 really close people to me, guys, and most of them are Christians that are calling it quits with their wife. Some there's infidelity, a couple there's not infidelity. They both think they're on their way out. How do you help them? Because I have one that I'm trying to push towards you. One wants to do it. I'll say the husband wants to go, the wife doesn't want to go. So the husband wants to save the marriage. The wife's like, dude, I'm done. How do you help that?
Well, if your first question now was if neither one wants to save it, right?
Right.
And that's where you have to establish that marriage and the vows that you took, that means something, that there's something very special about that. And that's difficult when both want out. That's the worst situation.
Okay.
It's much better if only one wants out.
Typically, you see people where only one wants out, right?
Right. Usually, okay. I'm talking to the person who wants to stay, who wants to keep the marriage intact, and this other person is wanting to leave.
So let's go there, because that's pretty much what happens for the most time. So maybe you can keep in mind the person that's listening to this is the person that wants out, and then also the person listening to this is the person that wants it to stay, but their partner wants out.
Okay. I'll address the person who wants to leave first.
Okay.
If you have a spouse who is fighting to keep your marriage, one of the things I want you, as the person who wants to leave, to think about is, how many people in your life have really fought for you, have really been able to have you saying, I want to leave. And they're like, I'll do what it takes. I want you as my spouse, my family member. I want our family to stay intact. And I'm willing to do what I need to do to make that happen. That this person is willing to stand, is willing to forgive, and is willing to look at themselves and change. That's very important, because it's actually a rare thing. It's a very special thing that someone would fight for you. And if you just dismiss that, and a lot of people do, they turn mean when it's not easy, when the other person is fighting for the relationship, because they see this person as holding them back. Don't turn mean. Don't become that person who makes more hurt in the situation. But that's the first thing, is consider just how special it is someone would fight for you. And next is, I would like to ask you what you thought you were committing to. Because when you commit to something, it means that even if things are not going well, I'm here. If you say I'm committed, and then you say, but I'll leave if it gets bad, that's not commitment. That's very conditional.
Is there anything that you would say, okay, you should leave?
Oh, sure. Yeah, not all marriages should be saved. If there's physical abuse, and, you know, if there's cheating, that's a decision that even in the Bible, we are told that that's an exception, that there is understanding there if you have to leave. But even then, I would say, take some time, see if this person has learned from this, if they regret this, and see if you can save it. And which is what I would say to the person who wants to leave, buck the trend, because right now divorce is just skyrocketing. Really since the lockdowns and all that, marriage got a little temporary boost during that time because there were some people who got some things taken care of because they were having to be around each other a lot.
Wow. Isn't that fascinating? Spending time with your spouse actually makes things better.
It did. And the New York Times interviewed me about it. I was one of the people who did some surveys on it. There were some lawyers who did surveys as well, and they had the same conclusion that it looks like things are going better. Then the lockdowns ended, and it just fell off the cliff. And
why?
I've never seen anything like it. Of course, it's not like I've just been around forever, but dang. Right now, there's so much emphasis on having these amazing experiences, and there's sort of a recipe. Almost every call I get is the same, and this is how it'll go. They'll say, things were going great, and then in this case, let's talk about a husband who's talking to me. This is 3 out of 4 of my calls. It's almost the same recipe every time. They'll say, she started going out with her friends, with these girls, and they would go to clubs and stuff, which doesn't sound so awful. You know, she's having a girl's night. Until now we're going on, what, 3 or 4 years since the lockdown? I don't even know. But during that time, I know what comes next. And one of the things I've started saying, and I didn't say it first, I don't know where I heard it, but single girls make girls single. Because I don't know what it is. But if one of them has had a breakup, they will tell the others, it is just the greatest thing. I'm so free. And they'll sit there and talk about this other girl's relationship, this other woman's relationship, and they'll pick it apart. They'll make this guy awful. You should leave him. I mean, it is like, it's a busybody type of thing, like that they're getting involved. And it just keeps happening. I mean, I'm not telling you something that I've heard a couple of times. It's almost every single day. And I'll even tell them, can I just ask you, is this what happened? And they'll say, yeah. And then the other thing is going to be, they got with the wrong therapist, because there are some good ones out there. But just because they have some letters after their name or they're a counselor or therapist, it's not all the same. You know, it's based on who you're talking to. And a lot of them, I had one guy tell me, he and his wife, he said, we were both just struggling. I don't remember which one wanted to leave, but they went to this counselor. The first words out of this person's mouth, guys, if this marriage fails, it's not a failure. Don't look at it that way.
Hey, check me right now if I'm wrong, because I'm going to say something. And I feel like I'm going to say it for you, but check me, please, if I'm wrong. You've been married for 23 years. You have a 22-year-old and a 19-year-old, correct?
Right.
If I'm in trouble with my marriage, and I'm going to a counselor that's on their third marriage. What am I doing? Why am I taking advice from someone that hasn't been able to make it work? Or am I being judgmental? Like, I'm just like, dude, if I want to be a good golfer, I ain't going to the golfer that failed. If I want to be a football player, I ain't going to the basketball coach. If I want to save my marriage, why am I going to a marriage counselor that's on their third husband, third wife? Am I wrong?
I agree that that's a red flag. I do think there are exceptions. I think there are people who learned and who were in situations where maybe it was more the other person's fault. But I do, you're barking up the wrong tree. Sorry, you're barking up the right tree. You're barking up the right tree there. That's a pun there. Bark. But what I would say is that you need to ask your therapist if they understand why you're there. Because a lot of times, if you say, look, our goal is to save the marriage and we need you to help us do that, they will tell you that's not my goal. They'll just flat out tell you.
Wow.
And it's like, wait a minute, why are we here? Let's get our money back and forget this. I remember when this is from several years ago, when there's almost a golden rule among coaches, you don't ever question counselors. Because I have clients who are clinical psychologists, psychiatrists, behavioral scientists. Like I told you, I'm being interviewed by the University of Alabama's counseling department later this month. We're not enemies. And most of the ones who I know completely agree with me. But just because you have the title counselor, it doesn't mean you have the same goals. And see, a coach has a goal. That's one of the differences. As a coach, my goal is to help you achieve your goal. A therapist or counselor, whatever you want to call them, that's not always their goal. And so you need to make sure, because a lot of times they'll say, my goal is to help both of you live as fulfilled of a life as you possibly can.
Wow.
And that may or may not include your spouse. And if that's how they're looking at it, that's a problem.
I'll keep going.
You want someone who has your goal of saving the marriage.
Can I say this too? I'm 45 years old. My wife and I are coming up on 20 years of marriage. Been together for 22 years. I don't mind my wife going out for girls' night at all. My wife, thank God, by her choice, but this would bother me. I don't think, and again, check me if I'm wrong, why is my married wife going out with single women to a club? Like, dude, my wife's 45. We got four kids at home. Why you want to go to a club? Like, you're not going to go to a club and talk to dudes about your husband and kids. You're going to go to a club and you're going to drink and dance. So as a husband, if I see my wife going down that, can I put my foot down and be like, dude, no. Like, you can go for some drinks or maybe dinner with your girlfriends, but you ain't going clubbing.
Right. And that's where, if this was like one time in a year or twice in a year, like maybe for a bachelorette thing or something. But it's astonishing to me the number of married women, and I know for a fact it has increased significantly in the last 2 or 3 years.
Terrible.
We're talking like every weekend. And the real problem is that it's mixed up, because the single girls go there, and I've talked to them about it. Why are you doing this? They want to meet guys and they want to be seen as, oh, we're having the most amazing time ever. It's like, forget the hangover. This is way beyond that. We're shutting the club down. I mean, that's what they want. They want to have this amazing experience, and they will really, it's all about the anticipation. That's what the fun part is, because they think they're going to have a lot of fun, but afterwards they're almost always disappointed. Like, it was okay. But I want to go again, because they think it's out there somewhere, this ultimate experience. But the single girls go because they want to be seen. They want to meet guys. They want to bring their girlfriends who are married, because they want them to see how much fun they're having, because that makes them feel really sexy and stuff. And then they want to kind of include them in the group. And so the married women start to think, man, if I was single, I'd have a lot more fun. Just like all these single girls who are trying to meet guys.
That hurts, man. If my wife was ever in that place, that would really hurt me. What can I do as a husband to where that's not attractive to her?
Well, it's not all on the husband, even though a lot of people in society pretty much tell you that everything is the husband's fault.
Right.
And that's just not true. It basically comes down to, first of all, as a spouse, do you have the right to say, I don't think this is appropriate and I'm not comfortable with this?
Yes.
You do. And we're told you don't. And a lot of therapists will say you don't. You know, that's you. You're insecure. No, I'm not. I'm smart. Because if I had a $200,000 car sitting out there and I came out to the parking lot, and by the way, this is not an original. I heard somebody else say this, but it works. You see a bunch of guys around your car, when I'm sitting on the hood and stuff, are you going to be like, ah, it's just my insecurity that's ticking me off?
Dude, this is so good.
Or are you going to be like, hey, that's my car. Get off my car. Leave my car alone. It's not yours. It's a really sophisticated piece of equipment. I'd appreciate if you took your hands off of it. That's a very normal reaction. Nobody's going to be like, you are so insecure, dude. No, they're going to be like, this is yours. And your wife is yours, just like you are her husband. You have every right to say, I don't feel comfortable with this, and this is not appropriate. Now, again, if it's once or twice a year, no big deal. The problem is when it's this weekend and next weekend and next weekend and then the weekend after that. That's when you're going to start looking at problems, because very little good is going to happen from that. And The thing is, if I hadn't, when I first started hearing it, which I heard a big uptick after COVID, And I don't know why that is for sure, but I have some theories. But when I first started hearing that, I started like, what is going on? But it became, like I said, about 3 out of 4 of the men that I talked to whose wives want to leave, it started with that. And they get FOMO. Fear of missing out, which in my opinion is the number one destroyer of marriages right now, is that here I am in this marriage. Am I missing out? Have I missed out on life because I got married? It's a marriage killer. And it causes them to go seek it out. Clubs, girls' trips, all that stuff, which when you first hear me say it, it sounds kind of innocent. Oh, she's just going out with her girlfriends. But who approaches girls at clubs?
Right.
And if they see a wedding ring, a lot of those guys figure, you know, she wouldn't be here at the club if she didn't want to flirt and talk and dance.
100%, dude. 100%.
And if it oftentimes does not work the other way around. If a guy said, yeah, me and some guys are going out to a club, wives are a little more like, wait a minute, because they know what really happens. And so guys usually don't even try to do that kind of stuff.
Why is that?
Why is what? The women know better?
Yeah, like, how come for the woman to say, get off my car, they're not insecure. But if the guy says, get off my car, we're insecure. Like, because you're 100% right. Like, women, guys got to lie about going out with guys to the club. Women be like, oh, I'm going with my girls. What is that difference?
I think it's because, and this is probably going to ruffle a few feathers, but women are more comfortable with games and they know how they work. They know how they work and they know how they're played, because women are taught from a very early age to play hard to get and let the man lead and all that stuff. And I've already told you hard to get doesn't work, but they're at least taught to be passive and to kind of put themselves in position for things to happen if they want it to happen. So they become comfortable with games a lot earlier than men. And men are usually the ones who will tell me when I say, man, look, I'll tell men, you can't take disrespect. You cannot tolerate it, because it will lead to her feeling less attracted to you with time. That's just how it works. And a lot of men are really worried that, well, I don't want to be insincere. I don't want to look like I'm being manipulative or playing games. And I'm like, I didn't say play games, but you have to have a structure. You have to have expectations. You have to respond to bad behavior. And yes, a wife can have bad behavior, just like a husband can have bad behavior. And you have to respond to that. And you have to do things to make statements sometimes. That's not a game. That's just real life. We do it in everything else. And so really, it comes down to, I think women know what goes on and they kind of know what's expected when you go to a club. And in some ways, they figure that they should be able to do it and you shouldn't. That's kind of where society is.
Are men a little bit more naive in that situation too than women? Because, oh, it's just a girl's trip. But men be, or women be like, you ain't going to a club? Are you crazy?
Exactly. Men are taught to be naive because they're told, men are taught to be naive in relationships because they are told you're too jealous, you're too possessive. This is on you. This is not on me. You know, I saw this interview with this girl who was really promiscuous, and they asked her, like, what would you say if there was a guy maybe who didn't like that you were so promiscuous in your past? She'd say, that's on him. That's not on me. He's just insecure. No. First of all, that's on you. You're the one who did it. Second of all, if you know that she has been that promiscuous, it's not insecurity, it's reality. There's nothing left to prove. You already know who she is. So it's not you being insecure. It's you understanding. And so, you know, that's what we're really facing. But that's what starts so many calls is a guy will start telling me the story and he'll say, I think it started when she started going to the club with her girlfriends. Jeez. And I'm like, it did. Go ahead. And I'm serious. About 3 out of 4 are that situation. And then it turns into where she wants to go to a therapist. And a lot of times they're going to a progressive, very humanistic, modern therapist whose goal is just that you will be fulfilled in life, not that we'll save your marriage. And it is amazing how many marriages just fall out of the sky at that point. And that's why I tell them, I'm all for you going to a counselor. First question, my goal is to save the marriage. Is that your goal? If they say anything except yes, that's not your person. Because they will teach you to be individuals and to think of the marriage last and yourselves first. Your happiness comes first and all that kind of stuff. That sounds correct. It sounds like, yeah, that's in the Bible somewhere. It's not, by the way. Happiness does not come first. Your measure of life is not your happiness. And there's a minister, Dr. Rubel Shelley, one of the best theological statements that I've heard. He said, we have got to stop thinking that our own happiness determines how much God loves us. In other words, if I'm not happy, that does not mean that God does not love me.
Yeah.
Or that my spouse does not love me. Or that I shouldn't, that I should seek something other than my marriage. Your happiness is not the indicator that things are great in your life or not. Sometimes it just means that you need to use discipline. You need to make some adjustments, but it does not mean that you need to throw everything out.
Let me ask you this because, man, time has flied and I have to land the plane on this podcast and I can already tell people are going to continue to reach out to you. They can reach out to you and find you everything. Where can people find you?
If you're married, go to marriageradio.com. That's marriageradio.com. And you can go to YouTube as well and just type in Coach Lee. If you're in a dating relationship, myexbackcoach.com, myexbackcoach.com. And on social media, it's Real Coach Lee pretty much everywhere, Instagram, YouTube.
Love it. Okay, so before I let you go, we're in this situation where wife's going to the club, 3 out of 4 times you hear it. Is there a way or is it way longer than 4 or 5 minutes? How do we get them back? How do we save the marriage?
Well, for starters, what the first thing that people usually do is they pick out every issue that they have that causes problems or grievances. It's like the airing of grievances at Festivus. I'm going to tell you all the problems I have with you. And one of the stories that I remember is a woman who set up a coaching session with me. And she said, we only see each other for 1 hour a week because we're separated. Our counselor told us we should separate, which you should not do if you want to save your marriage, by the way. Even Psychology Today says over 80% of marriages who separate will divorce.
Jeez.
Now, if you knew that number, and that's what I want to know, why are counselors telling couples, I think a trial separation would make sense and let the smoke settle and all that. It's just basically, it's a trial divorce is what it is. And if your spouse wants to leave, they're going to like that. So it's foolish, but they will sometimes suggest that. And again, that's why you got to pick the right person. But she told me that. And she said, so we're seeing each other once a week and it's for a counseling session. And she said, all we do is dig up an issue and fight about it in front of a third party. And I said, so it's basically like a chaperoned fight every week.
That's terrible.
And that's the only time you're getting together. And she, I said, so the counselor thinks that'll work. I don't really know what her goal is. Once again, what is this person's goal that you're giving your mind to and your marriage to? What is their goal? And so I said, here's what you need to do. Call a counselor, say thank you. Say, we're going to take a few months off. Replace that session of chaperoned fighting. You two go to lunch, go roller skating, and have a rule. No negatives. We're just going to talk positively. We'll talk about the kids. We'll have fun. We'll laugh. We will share stories. We'll talk about some memories we have. No negatives. But don't we need to discuss those things? Yeah, you do. But you have, right? Most of the time, you have done it a lot. Everybody who comes to me, it's all about communication. sometimes people need to shut up. It's not always communication is going to fix everything. And a lot of stuff, after you've talked about it a little bit, let it go. Leave it in the past. Try to start establishing some positive experiences with this other person, even if that's just getting to where you can speak civilly to each other. You can have a trip together, roller skating. I mean, these sound really basic, and they are. But you have to have something practical you can do to make some progress here. And the other thing is going to be try to start settling into roles again. And I know that's a bad word nowadays, gender roles. Oh, no. Right. You're going to melt if you hear me say this. But, you know, cook him dinner. One of the ways men and women bond is he comes home as the provider. He comes home and he smells this food and it smells wonderful and the house is warm and she hugs him and here's his wife and his children in this home that she's made and they're going to have a meal together as a family. It's a beautiful thing. It's practically gone these days. Another thing is going to be that they would, he would take her out for dinner, you know, and just, I want to take you out for dinner this weekend. Not, do you want to go eat somewhere? I'm going to take you out for dinner this weekend. Oh. You are. Yeah. Friday night or Saturday, pick one. Friday night. Okay, good. I'm going to wear khakis and a button up. Where are we going? It's a surprise. Things like that.
Yeah.
And you want to have family time where the person who wants to leave can start feeling this is mom, dad, and the kids. This is what I'm leaving. Give them something to stay for. And so start establishing some of those basic things. And it can be a really beautiful thing. And you also have to prioritize sex. And that's...
Let's go.
Yeah. You got to, even if you don't want to, do it anyway. Prioritize
it. Okay, how do you... And I think I'm speaking more for the women here, because most men don't have a problem with having sex with their wives. How does a woman have sex with her husband when she doesn't want to?
Well, it can start with the idea of, I'm going to do this because we need it. You know, again, it's the Snickers bar thing. I want the Snickers, but I have discipline because I want a decent looking body and a healthy body more than I want the Snickers. So it's discipline. And yeah, is that the coolest, most romantic sounding thing? No, it's not. But, you know, when you go to the ER and they say, yeah, we've got to cut you open and do this other stuff, you're not going to say, you know, I don't really like the way that sounds.
Right.
So I'm just going to keep my infected appendix. Thank you, sir. That's not how we operate in any other area in life. And so if you want to save your marriage, this is a step that you need to take and you need to prioritize it. If you can go every day, that's great, because when men and women have sex, they produce something called oxytocin. And usually the female produces a little bit more, but the man produces it too. And it's a bonding chemical, makes you feel close. Mothers also produce it when they nurse their babies, and it creates bonding. For a man, he produces oxytocin, so he bonds as well, but he also produces something called vasopressin, which is a hormone that makes you possessive. Like, this is my wife. This is my woman. You keep your hands off of her, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, most women will tell you, I want him to protect me. Yep. That's what makes him want to protect you. That's what makes him willing to die for you, is vasopressin. And you get to have it pumping through his veins when you have sex with him. And I talk to a lot of wives and I'll tell them, look, believe it or not, this is not that complicated for you. You don't have to come up with magic words. And I said, I don't mean to sound really old fashioned, except that it worked a lot better then. Look around.
Right.
Like, do I need to say more? Look around at the world. To say it worked better 50 years ago, it did. Did we have everything perfect? No, but we had the family stuff pretty good, actually.
Right.
And I'll just tell her, you don't have to come up with magic words, but just do two things. Cook dinner for him so that when he comes in the door, he has that smell of food. Like, it's going to be okay. I had a tough day, but I came home and have dinner with my family that my wife made for me because she loves me. And then have sex with him that night. It'll usually work out. And people are like, oh, that's really oversimplified. It works.
That's awesome.
I mean, I see it work a lot, that if she will do that. Now, the third thing's as important. Stop bickering. Stop it. Stop fighting. Stop yelling. No yelling. Have kind things to say. And if you know it's going to be a disagreement or start a fight, just don't do it. Don't bring up the past. I know you want to, but you're not going to bust. Again, discipline. And start having some positive interactions with him. So those three things, ladies, if you can do those three things, you have really good odds. He's going to at least want to come to the table and work on this.
Let's go. Coach Lee, thank you so much, man, for taking time out of your schedule and coming here. I mean, listen, you can replay this as many times as you want. Share this with your friend or family member who is struggling in their marriage or their relationship. Or you could share, especially the first part of this podcast, with your desperate friend that is so thirsty, he keeps or she keeps calling their ex. And you're like, dude, pump the brakes. Coach Lee helps hundreds, thousands of Americans on a daily basis, and he just helped you for free. Once again, how can people find you, follow you, and reach out to you?
If you're married, marriageradio.com. It's marriageradio.com. If you're dating, myexbackcoach.com. Or you can just go to YouTube and type in Coach Lee, and I'm the blonde guy who comes up first.
I love it, man. Coach Lee, thank you so much. Eli, thank you so much. And Johnny Cardwell, you're out there somewhere. Thanks for making this happen. I love you, bro. Thanks so much for listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, and share. Thumbs up, share it. Help somebody. Save a marriage by sending them this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, it's been another awesome week of Level Up.